Much for the introduction and the invitation. I think I have gone actually to only places in Canada in the last 10 months or 11 months or so. Okay, this is really a continuation of Adrian's talk, so I don't know how many people were here yesterday or not, so we'll assume that you know what he said. But let me remind you a little bit. So I'm going to consider the electrical impedance tomography problem in this lecture. And the second lecture, I will consider the problem that Chris Crock just talked about, the boundary distance function and the travel time problem. And then I will connect the two problems. So I'm going to consider an anisotropic. I was going to start with this, but I will say something about isotropic case. Conductivity. So this is a positive definite symmetric matrix. And let me start with in a domain in Rn, omega is bounded with smooth bound. So this will denote that conductivity, this will be the conductivity of the material. And this is the anisotropic case because the conductivity depends on direction, not just on position. So I will talk a little bit about some examples in a moment, but the equation for the potential under assumption of no sources or sinks of current is simply the equation with the divergence of the conductivity times the gradient is equal to 0 on omega. And I'm going to give a voltage potential on the boundary. So if the boundary. Okay, so in practical applications, say medical applications, you put electrodes around your body, and that's representing the voltage potential. And I solve this problem, and what you measure is the Dirichlet-Neumann map, or the current to voltage map, which is the normal derivative of the solution with respect to this metric. So this is mu I at the boundary. So physically, this is the current flux at the boundary. Measure the current flux induced at the boundary. And mu, so here is your domain, omega. Actually, I usually choose in this type of problem, the unit outer normal, but because of the talk next time and because of Chris' talk, I will choose mu to be actually the inner outer normal. So I change the sign. Okay, so examples of anisotropic conductivity, yes? Sorry? Ah, in and out. Thank you. Any other questions so far? Any other mistake? What do you say? Ah. Thank you. This is the problem here where there are experts in the audience, right? Okay, so examples of anisotropic conductivities are muscle tissue. It's very anisotropic. The conductivity is very different in the longitudinal direction and compared to the transversal direction. For instance, cardiac muscle. The conductivity in the transverse direction is 2.3, and this is MHO, that's the inverse of ohm, because conductivity is 1 over the resistivity. This is ohm. And in the longitudinal direction, smaller, sorry, it's bigger, it's 6.3 MHO. So this is much bigger than the transversal direction. So there is a considerable difference in the conductivity in the fiber direction compared to the longitudinal, the transverse direction. Okay, the isotropic case so we'll be mixing both the anisotropic and isotropic is the case where the conductivity the matrix gamma ij is a multiple of the Kronecker delta. So it's a diagonal matrix. This is from j. And sigma here is a strictly positive function on omega closure. Okay. So examples of isotropic conductivities, although, you know, everything is really anisotropic in practice, although it's ignored a lot of the time, so you consider it to be slightly anisotropic in some cases, but it's, for instance, that something that I'm quite interested in, breast cancer tumor, has a conductivity which has been measured at 2.0 MHO, and normal breast tissue is 0.3 MHO. Because so there is the conductivity in the breast cancer tumor is much larger than the surrounding tissue. This is due to the fact that the blood, when there is cancer, there is more blood vessels going into the cancer, and so the conductivity is much higher. So this is being tried. It's electrical impedance tomography is being tried as one of the methods to perhaps not to replace mammography, which misses a lot of breast cancers, but in companion with mammography. There are other suggestions, ultrasound, MRI, et cetera, et cetera. Okay. So the question is, the inverse problem is, can we recover gamma? So gamma, when I talk about gamma, is going to be an anisotropic conductivity. And sigma will be an isotropic conductivity. Can we recover gamma by measuring lambda gamma, the voltage to current map or the Dirichlet to Neumann map, because you're mapping Dirichlet data to Neumann data. As I'm sure Adrian explained to you yesterday, this is a problem that was originated, at least in the mathematical community, with Calderon. Okay, so the answer is, as in the first talk this morning, no. There is a large group of obstructions. So the answer is no. You take any change of variables, a diffeomorphism, which leaves the boundary fixed. Then if you take the following conductivity, which I will call it the push forward of the conductivity by definition. This is the differential of psi transpose. So this is a matrix of the differential, psi transpose, composed with gamma, composed the differential of psi, divided by the determinant of the differential of psi, composed with psi inverse. This looks like a complicated expression, but just is the push forward of a metric, in some sense, the composition as matrices. Then the Dirichlet Neumann map of this conductivity is the same as the original one. Okay? And let me explain why. Any questions? The reason is the following. One, there are many ways to see this. One can do it directly. But the nice way to see it is the following, is to consider the Dirichlet form, which actually the way that Calderon originally considered this problem, the Dirichlet form associated to this boundary value problem, which is the sum where U solves star. So this will be my star problem. So this measures the power needed to maintain the potential F on the boundary in physical terms. Now, if you consider V to be U composed with psi inverse, you change variables in your solution, then V will solve the same equation. So I will denote this by L gamma of U, so I don't need to be writing it all the time, of V equal to 0. V at the boundary is going to be F, because the diffeomorphism is the identity at the boundary. So it's the same boundary value as U. And the quadratic form and gamma tilde is exactly the push forward of gamma. Okay, so you change variables in this integral. This is not going to be changed and remains the same. So the quadratic form is preserved if gamma tilde is the push forward of gamma. What's the relation of this quadratic form with the Dirichlet Neumann map? A simple exercise, integration by parts, tells you that you take the Dirichlet Neumann map at the boundary against F, integrated against surface measure. This is Q gamma of F. So in other words, this linear map is the one associated to this quadratic form. So to give Q gamma or lambda gamma is equivalent information. And that this is actually a very powerful point of view, because it reduces the problem of finding enough solutions of the equation to recover the conductivity gamma. And I will come to this point soon. Okay, but in the case that it's isotropic, so if gamma is isotropic, we have uniqueness. And this has been known, so this is, did you state the results? So let me just, so the theorem on bigger, dimension bigger or equal than 3, so I just will state the uniqueness results. This is just an introductory talk. If the two Dirichlet Neumann maps are the same, then the conductivities are the same. In this case, there is unique identifiability of the problem, and this was a result of Sylvester and myself. And in the two-dimensional case, Adrian proved the same result if the gamma high are isotropic. So. So in this case, there is no obstruction because to uniqueness, like there is in the anisotropic case. So the reason for that is the following. I can use three black dots. Huh? Suppose sigma is isotropic. And you have a change of variables. So that the decimal fist at the boundary is identity. And suppose this is isotropic. Okay, when you have a conductivity which is isotropic, and you push it forward, so you do this operation, this will not anymore, in general, be isotropic, right? Because you're composing with the differential of the map, unless it's diagonal, I mean, has the size diagonal or has some other properties. In general, suppose this is isotropic, this implies that the identity. So in that case, this, there is no group of diffeomorphies acting on the problem. This is an old result of you remember? Sorry? No. In Newper. I don't know whether I'm writing it correctly. In the 40s. In the early 50s. Sorry? Yeah, that's right. It's a very simple proof. Yeah. Right. Okay. So that's it. So the question is, for the anisotropic problem, so for the isotropic, actually, of course, there are a lot of issues. Always there is a lot of issues, but at least from the point of view of identifiability, we know the result. But for the anisotropic, very little is known, especially in the dimension, in the case of dimension 3 or larger. So the question, and this, I see a lot of young people here, and this is a very good question, which has been almost no progress in dimension 3 or larger, is, is this the only obstruction in dimension, bigger in any dimension? That means, suppose you have two conductivities, anisotropic. Let me make the emphasis here. Does there exist a diffeomorphy which is the identity at the boundary? So that one is the push forward of the other. And the answer is yes in two dimensions. This problem is easier in two dimensions and harder in dimension three or larger, and this is the opposite. The isotropic case is easier in higher dimensions and harder in two dimensions. So the answer is yes. In dimension 2, and the proof goes by, it's a is by reduction, I will actually point out the idea of the proof. It's actually even easier than the original proof. By reduction using isothermal coordinates, to isotropic case, to reduce to isotropic case. So one can use Adrian's result. This was done by Sylvester. The isothermal coordinates, you know, are due to alphas and bears and alphas and so on. So that means in two dimension two, you can always find a diffeomorphism so that this is a multiple is a isotropic. Let me write it here. So you can change an anisotropic conductivity to isotropic one. Okay. So let me tell you what is known about higher dimensions, but before doing that, I will reformulate the problem in geometric terms. Any questions? Questions, Peter? No? Okay, I will consider a Riemannian, as Chris was doing this morning, a Riemannian metric. And the Laplace-Beltrami operator associated to this metric. Local coordinates. You can see the difference that I'm not a geometer. I like to write things in coordinates on omega, and u at the boundary is f. This is very similar to the conductivity except for this factor of square root of determinant of g, and gij, upper ij, is the inverse of the metric g. And you can solve the Dirichlet problem for the Laplace-Beltrami operator and define the Dirichlet to Neumann map as before. So there is a Manner. The only difference here, you have to add this factor of square root of the determinant of g at the boundary. Okay. So this is comes from geometry. You have a Riemannian metric. You solve the Dirichlet problem for the Laplace-Beltrami operator and define the Dirichlet to Neumann map. So maps Dirichlet data to Neumann data, and again, this is the unit inner normal. Well, and it's very easy to check once more. That the Dirichlet Neumann map of the pullback of the metric G is the same as lambda G. And now the pullback, this is just the standard pullback of the metric G. So it's exactly the same obstruction as we had in the first lecture this morning about the boundary distance function. And psi here is again is a diffeomorphism, which is the identity of the boundary. Okay, so you can define this inverse problem, the geometric inverse problem, is can we recover G from lambda G up to the natural obstruction. So the natural obstruction is this. this group of diffeomorphisms that leaves the boundary fixed. So what's the connection of this with the conductivity problem? If the connection is only in dimension 3 or larger, in dimension 3 or larger, lambda g is lambda gamma if, remember the formula here, g is the determinant of gamma 1 n minus 2 times the inverse of the matrix g, gamma, and gamma, you can go from one to the other, is the square root of the determinant of g times g inverse. So you can consider either the conductivity problem or the Riemannian metric, and they are related if the Riemannian metric and the conductivity are related this way. So the anisotropic problem in dimension 3 or larger is really a geometric problem. Can you recover the metric up to the natural obstruction? The metric is given by this. So that's, here is where I use dimension bigger or equal than 3. And so therefore can be posed on manifolds. So suppose now mg, you wrote m, boundary mg, is that good? To keep the notation consistent with this morning. This is a Riemannian manifold with boundary. Compact Riemannian manifold, I always would assume this is connected. And the question is, you can recover the, you can, from the Dirichlet normal map associated to the metric G, can we recover the manifold and the metric? And not only you want to find the metric itself, but perhaps the topology of the manifold. Okay? So you only know the boundary of the manifold, that you know, and you know it's a Riemannian metric, you measure the Dirichlet to Neumann map here. Question, can we recover the manifold itself and the metric? Yes. Sorry, no, you need some, this is a very good question, unknown in general. What are the necessary and sufficient conditions for a map to be a Dirichlet Neumann map? For instance, has to be self-adjoint. It's positive definite. It's in the, if the metric is smooth, it's a pseudo-differential operator, and you can compute the full symbol. There are several obstructions. However, it's not known. And that's a very important question, is what are necessary and sufficient conditions for a map to be a Dirichlet Neumann map? So the theorem, and this is a joint work with Matti Lassas, in the case that this is real analytic and the boundary is real analytic, so G is a real analytic metric, then from lambda g and the boundary, you can recover the manifold, not just the metric, but the manifold itself and the metric. Of course, the assumption of real analyticity is quite strong, but this is the best result known. And I will explain what are the difficulties to prove to consider the anisotropic case in a moment, but this result can be improved a little bit, well, quite a bit, by just measuring the Dirichlet to Neumann map on a piece of the boundary, and only this needs to be very analytic. The rest of the boundary can be infinity, but this part is analytic. It's enough to measure it in here, not the Dirichlet to Neumann map everywhere. So, in particular, you can determine, you know, whether there are holes or handles or besides the metric itself. Okay, and let me tell you the result in dimension 2, which will be very relevant for the connection with the boundary distance function defined this morning. In dimension 2, there is an additional obstruction. So now I am in the case of a Riemannian metric in two dimensions. So you have a Riemann surface. It's not equivalent to the conductivity problem. The conductivity problem and the Riemannian, the Laplace Beltrami operator are only equivalent in dimension 3 or larger, as I pointed out before. Now, the Laplace Beltrami operator is conformal invariant if alpha is a positive function. So you cannot, so the solutions of this, any multiple of the metric, are the same. You have the same harmonic functions. So therefore, if alpha at the boundary is 1, the Dirichlet to Neumann map is going to be unchanged for this multiple of the metric. So you cannot recover the manifold. You can recover, at best, a conformal class of the manifold. So the question is, you have two Dirichlet to Neumann, this is in dimension 2, two Dirichlet to Neumanns to be the same, that there exists a diffeomorphism which is an identity at the boundary, so that the pullback of G1 is a multiple of G2, alpha scalar function positive. In other words, the conformal class of the manifold. And the answer is yes. And there you don't need any assumption besides having a Riemannian manifold. I think I needed like 7 lectures in there. I was going to explain the ideas of the proofs of this, but I don't think we'll have time. So the theorem, this is in dimension 2. This is also the same paper, actually, with John Webb with Matti Lassas. This is the conjecture. The question is true in two dimensions. And actually, you only need to measure the Dirichlet to Neumann map on part of the boundary. In any open subset of the boundary. Why is this relevant? And this is going to be the topic of my lecture tomorrow. Why is this? I'm pointing this out here because in dimension 2, in dimension 2, one proves, one has this boundary distance function. This is the distance function between boundary points. If the manifold is simple, as defined in the previous lecture, I hope everyone was in the previous lecture, a beautiful lecture. The manifold is simple, meaning there is a unique minimizing, roughly speaking, between the two points, and the boundary is strictly convex, although there were some controversy about the definition. Then, if you know the boundary distance function, let me write it more precisely. If we know dg, we can recover lambda g. So you know the distance function. This is travel time tomography. So you know the travel time of waves going from x to y. And this is this joint work with Donny Pestov. If you know the travel times of waves going from x to y, you can determine this more analytic object, which is the Dirichlet-Neumann map. So as Chris was saying, this is, gives a connection between this sort of geometric problem and this more analytic object, in my opinion. Okay, so let me then tell you how the proof of the result, I will come back to this point next time, but let me just say it in order to combine the two lectures today, how to show the theorem, again in dimension 2, suppose you have two metrics with the same boundary distance function. Then this implies that exists a diffeomorphy which leaves the boundary fixed, so that one metric is isometric to the other one, they are isometric. This is in the case, I repeat, M, G, I are simple. So the sketch of the proof. So DG1, by what I just mentioned, implies that the Dirichlet-Neumann maps are the same. By the result of Lazar's, so far it's only known in 2D. I will come to this point next in my next lecture. This is let me make the point what we would like to do in higher dimensions. I will come back to the higher dimensional case in a moment. Sorry? It's not direct, but not so complicated. What would you say? Is it difficult to show? I will give the indication of how to prove this next time. Then by the result of Lazar and myself, then there exists one metric is conformal to the other, alpha G2, with a diffeomorphy, which is identity at the boundary. Actually, I'm going to leave that because I want to talk a little bit about the isotropic case and the difficulty in higher dimensions. So we know that this right? Because that dg1 is equal to dg2. We know this. And psi star of alpha 1. So you have the d of alpha g2 is dg2 with this multiple alpha, this conformal multiple alpha, right? This is the obstruction, the conformal obstruction in dimension 2 to determine a metric from the Dirichlet-Neumann map. But now I use Muhometov result, or, well, actually in the simple case is Muhometov result, and this is also known for SGM manifolds. If you have two metrics conformal to each other, alpha is equal to 1. And this is what Chris actually proved. A very beautiful proof at the end of the lecture today, his lecture today. So therefore, you have what you want. And then it's a diffeomorphism which is the identity at the boundary. So this actually, this is a connection that I expected. I will tell you the reasons why next time. But in higher dimensions, we don't really want to make this. Well, of course, we would like to know that. It will be interesting. But actually, what we would like to do in higher dimensions. So, as I pointed out before, very little is known about recovering G from lambda G. And I think I won't have time today to explain why. I will do it at the beginning of next lecture. Right? And just the real analytic category, essentially, that's what we know. However, we know much more is known about the problem of recovering G from DG. For example, you have the theorem that mentioned, that Chris mentioned, Gromov's theorem. If you have the Euclidean metric, this is the Euclidean metric, you have the same boundary distance function, then G must be Euclidean. It's isometric to Euclidean metric. That's Gromov's theorem. That's not known for the Dirichlet-Neumann map. Incredibly enough, suppose in dimension 3 or larger, you have that the Dirichlet-Neumann map is the same as the one from the Euclidean metric. So you have the same boundary measurements as you will obtain by the constant conductivity. Is it Euclidean? Not known. Looks like a very simple question. Another thing that we know is what this theorem is known in any dimension. Right? The proof works in any dimension. So we were able to solve the problem when two metrics are conformal to each other with the Dirichlet-Neumann map if we could prove that lambda G that's the direction we want to go, not the other way. Well, the other way will be extremely interesting. That in fact, in any dimensions from the Dirichlet-Neumann map, you can recover the Dirichlet-Neumann map, but will lead to a lot of results for the Dirichlet-Neumann map if we could prove that question. So, in n equal to 2, we have dg implies lambda g. Let me put it. So I leave this question as homework for you for tomorrow. Okay, I'll finish.